And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, April 26, 2024. Some residents of Tomboro Town in Western Equatoria State take cover at UN and church compounds due to insecurity.
The market is completely deserted. Very few people just sitting under the veranda with their shops, very few. But all the shops' doors are closed and the market is completely empty. People are just carrying their things to the units and seeking for security.
And Sudanese rival forces prepare for a battle over the town of El Fasher.
Reports indicate that both parties have launched indiscriminate attacks using explosive weapons with wide area effects, such as mortar shells and rockets fired from fighter jets in residential districts.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civilians in Tomboro County of Western Equatoria State are camping at compounds of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan and the Catholic Church following a series of attacks on local community leaders in the area by unidentified gunmen. The parish priest of St. Mary Catholic Church, Reverend Mark Kumbonyeki, says most of the residents who spoke to him say they are afraid to spend the night in their houses.
The market is completely deserted. Very few people just sitting under the veranda with their shops, very few. But all the shops' doors are closed and the market is completely empty. People are just carrying their things to the units seeking for security. That is the situation on the ground.
Do you know the identity of the attackers?
I cannot know because since it was the night. What I've heard is that last Sunday, one person went to church to buy cassava flour. On his way coming back, then he disappeared on the way. And the relatives have been demanding that they need their person from the government authority, or they need to be allowed to go and search for their person. So then the government told them that the government is taking a charge of it. They cannot be allowed to go to that area. So according to what I heard is that it seems the relative of the person who got lost are the one taking revenge. This is what I've heard from the authorities.
What are the authorities doing, the local authorities in Tomboro County? I know that in a place like Tomboro, there is police, there is military, there is CID, there is national security. There are members of the South Sudan Defense Forces. What have they done in the backdrop of these attacks on local leaders?
The government soldiers are moving in the truck. So they have been deployed. They are now monitoring the situation within the town. The units also are moving within the town. They come to us in the street and they go back to units. But it seems the government soldiers have been deployed to go a bit further from the town to see what is happening. This is what I've just seen. Their car is moving full with people, with soldiers. And within the town, as I was coming just 1 hour ago, many of the soldiers are well armed and they are monitoring, just moving along the road and sitting in the shades of the shop. This is what I've seen just about 1 hour ago.
From your description, would you categorize the situation in Tomboro Town as calm or tense?
What I've seen is that there is too much fear. That is one, according to what I've seen, because something which happened yesterday at night, instead of people now to be calm, to know what is the problem, where is it coming from, what is the source. There is too much fear. This has scared the people. 5 different houses, different locations to be attacked. No one is clear who did it. So this has scared the people.
You told me that you went to UNMIS and saw people gathering there people taking refuge there. And you also said some people have come to the church to take refuge. What are these people telling you? Why are they taking refuge in UN compounds and church compounds as opposed to trusting security forces to protect them?
What they are saying is that now something happened yesterday, and at night there was no any movement of the soldiers to those locations where people were shot at and where houses were burned. This is what they are telling me, that if something happened at night and there was no movement to those locations, so that's why they are afraid that if anything happens to them when they are in the hill, in the home state, then that means also they may not get any response.
The seat of Western Equatorial State, the seat of the government, is in Yambio. Any response from the state government?
I met the commissioner this morning, and I spoke again with him 2 hours ago, who told me they are patrolling, and tonight they are going to deploy soldiers in most of the suspected location where the enemies may enter the town. This is what the commissioner told me. But as a response from the governor authority from Yambio, I have not heard anything what they have said.
If you have an opportunity to speak to the people who are involved in these attacks, what would your message be?
My message will be still of peace, because I've been talking, and not today, even since 2020. What I've been telling people that war is not going to help us, and killing is taking us nowhere. And this revenge killing is not going to help us in Western Equatoria, especially in Tombora here. And also this revenge, and this tribal killing, this tribal war. Because in Tombora here, there is no concrete reason really that the two tribes are fighting, because we have been living together for years. So I've been telling people, and I will continue to tell them, that if we continue with this merciless killing, this revenge killing, this tribal killing, it is taking us in Tombora nowhere.
That's Reverend Father Mark Kumbonyeki, parish priest of St. Mary Catholic Church in Tombora. He spoke with me from Tombora County in Western Equatoria earlier today. Still on fighting the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk is urging Sudan's warring parties to immediately de-escalate the violence in and around El Fasher city in northern Darfur, which has killed dozens of civilians. Lisha Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
At least 43 people, including women and children, reportedly have been killed in fighting in the Sudanese city of El Fasher since April 14th. That was when the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces began its push to gain control of the only city in Darfur still in the hands of the rival Sudanese armed forces. United Nations Human Rights Chief Volker Turk is expressing alarm at the escalating fighting and calls for an end to the conflict, which has ravaged the country for more than a year. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, his spokesperson, Saif Magango, warns the battle in El Fasher may be taking a turn for the worse.
Reports indicate that both parties have launched indiscriminate attacks using explosive weapons with wide area effects, such as mortar shells and rockets fired from fighter jets in residential districts. Since early April, the RSF has conducted several large-scale attacks on villages in western El Fasher, mostly inhabited by the African Zagawa ethnic community.
Magango says several Zagawa villages have been burned down. This, he says, raises the specter of further ethnically motivated violence in Darfur, including mass killings. He says civilians trapped in El Fasher are afraid they will be killed if they try to flee the city, home to 2 million people and 500,000 internally displaced people.
This dire situation is compounded by a severe shortage of essential supplies, as deliveries of commercial goods and humanitarian aid have been heavily constrained by the fighting. and delivery trucks are unable to freely transit through RSF-controlled territory.
High Commissioner Turk is urging both parties to the conflict and their allies to grant civilians safe passage to other areas and allow safe and unhindered humanitarian aid to reach civilians in dire need. He also is calling on the warring parties to negotiate an end to Sudan's year-long conflict, which UN agencies say has left more than 18 million people facing acute food insecurity and displaced nearly 9 million people. The RSF has not responded to VOA's repeated requests for comment on allegations about the fighting at El Fasher. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move back to Juba, where some South Sudanese say they are too busy to read a book. Some residents of Juba Town say they only read during preparations for exams. Bookstore owners in the capital say their shelves are stocked, but customers do not buy books. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayar reports from Juba.
Okay, what about this?
73-year-old John Panchul, a South Sudanese civil servant, is at a bookshop in Konyokonyo Market. He says he does not have time to read because of his many commitments.
Like this book, when you read it, it may take you 1 month if you want to understand it. Read it and then understand it means that you need a long time. There's a lot of commitment. I'm committed here and there for this and this. If you have time, you can read any book. Any book, you can read it. It's increasing your knowledge.
Juba resident Parek Toby says he adopted a culture of reading since he was a boy. He says despite his busy schedule, he still set time aside for reading.
It's not easy to find time, but there's always dead time. People are on social media all the time reading things that are completely not nourishing to your brain, watching videos that are not very helpful. Social media is structured in a way, the technology is done in a way to make it addictive. So you're scrolling and scrolling, but you're really not developing anything. So you have to intentionally, that time that you're devoting to social media and to unnecessary interactions, to really devote 2 hours or so, 1 hour, even before you go to bed.
Alinda Shali owns a bookstore near Juba's Konyokonyo Market. He says very few South Sudanese buy books.
The challenge we are trying to have with it is that people are partially a little bit ignorant about the business. You know, the bookshop is there, but people basically, they're busy on buying things concerning finance. The book which in most cases people like so much is a poor dad and the rich dad. People like it so much, and some books like Atomic Habits, Same as Ever, Tough Times Never Last, but Tough People Do. These are the books which people like so much.
According to the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, more than 70% of South Sudanese are younger than 30 and half can neither read nor write. Taban Leleung, professor of literature at the University of Juba, says the culture of reading has decreased in South Sudan. He says many people only read for exams. Loleung, who has authored several books, says although he is 90 years old, he constantly devotes time to reading to help his brain function well. According to the U.S.-based Pew Research Center, 26% of those who had read a book in the past 12 months say that what they enjoyed most was learning, getting knowledge, and discovering. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, one South Sudanese musician is back on the stage. Find out where he was hiding.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today What do you do on the weekends?
Over the weekend, I happen to read my books, the novels, and sometimes I go for my leisure time, play pool tables, and watch football because I'm a fan of Arsenal.
Weekends, most of the time I listen to music, I go to the beach, I hang out with my friends. Sometimes I go to the clubs, but mostly, most of my time, I'm always with my mom.
It is very good. Weekend is something where you can enjoy your life with either your boyfriends, girlfriends, your friends, and colleagues sometime. So it can be in form of swimming, playing footballs, and watching football. I'm a great fan of football.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The World Health Organization says immunization has saved at least 150 million lives in the last 50 years. As the international community marks the World Immunization Week, inoculating against diseases like smallpox is considered as one of humanity's greatest achievements. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
World Immunization Week is celebrated at the end of April with the aim of highlighting collective action and to promote the use of vaccines to protect people of all ages against diseases. The World Health Organization collaborates with countries worldwide in obtaining the necessary guidance and technical support needed to establish effective immunization programs. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says communities have to be informed on vaccine-preventable diseases.
World Immunization Week is a reminder of the life-saving power of vaccines. 50 years ago, in 1974, WHO launched the expanded program on immunization, bringing countries together to provide children everywhere with vaccines. Since then, vaccination has saved an estimated 154 million lives from diseases like measles, tetanus, diphtheria, and pneumonia. Thanks to vaccination, an infant born today is 40% more likely to survive to their first birthday than they were 50 years ago.
The WHO African region says the continent still lags compared to other regions of the world in access to vaccines. About 1 in 5 African children do not receive all the necessary and basic vaccines. Harold Kipchumba, a 62-year-old Kenyan, is a polio survivor, a condition that can only be fought through immunization. He advocates for mass inoculation. He says his condition is as a result of negligence and lack of information.
Coming from a superstitious society then, people thought maybe I was being bewitched. But with time, the doctors confirmed that I had contracted polio, and sadly there was nothing more that could be done, and there was no treatment. So as I grew up and I was in school, and later learned that I got polio because of having missed in the vaccination, I thought it's high time that no other parent should remain ignorant or not informed.
Over 30 million children under the age of 5 in Africa still suffer from vaccine-preventable diseases. Among them, more than 500,000 children succumb to these illnesses every year, accounting for about 58% of all vaccine-preventable deaths globally. According to WHO, while more than 4 million more children were vaccinated globally in 2022 compared to 2021, there were still 20 million children who missed out on one or more of their vaccines. Tedros says conflicts, economic hardships, and rise in vaccine hesitancy are some of the threats to efforts to reach children.
Old killers like measles and diphtheria are resurging. This World Immunization Week, WHO is calling on governments to reverse this trend with renewed political commitment, sustainable funding, integrated planning, community engagement, and research and development. We can show it's humanly possible to give the life-saving power of vaccines to every child.
The WHO says at the moment immunization prevents between 3.5 to 5 million deaths every year from diseases like diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, influenza, and measles. For the past 50 years, the expanded program on immunization has focused on protecting all children against 6 childhood illnesses. Today, the number of recommended vaccines has increased to 13, with 17 more vaccines that are recommended based on specific circumstances. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Maureen Odhiambo in San Francisco.
From medicine, we now go to technology. As climate change wreaks havoc globally, the need for sustainable solutions grows ever more urgent. In Nigeria, a private company recently introduced an Uber-like taxi system composed of 200 electric vehicles. The company says the fleet is a step toward a greener future. From Abuja, Gibson Emeka has this story narrated by Ria Van Ralph.
Chidi Eka oversees operations at the Abuja branch of Enviable Transport, a company operating electric vehicles, or EVs. His firm has rolled out the cars for use in Abuja and other cities. Eka says this pioneering initiative aims to enhance urban transportation while addressing climate concerns.
By introducing electric vehicles that will not emit carbon gases and the rest of them, we are ensuring that we are contributing to our social responsibility towards helping to reduce the level of pollution in the environment.
Despite concerns that have held back EV adoption in Nigeria, especially worries about limited range vehicles, Ben Idika, a ride dispatcher for Enviable Transport, says the 400-kilometer range of fully charged EVs is enough for most of the company's rides. He foresees a surge in popularity for electric vehicles within the next few years among Nigerians.
In the next couple of years, let's say 5 years from now, 10, it could be way shorter than that. I believe that we have more population of Nigerians preferring the electric vehicles. Why do I say so? We are in a very technological paced generation where people are quite curious to find alternatives to the already known means of life they're living.
As Nigeria overcomes infrastructure hurdles associated with EV operation, such as building charging stations, adoption is gaining momentum. This is driven in part by the advantages of EVs, including reduced emissions and air pollution. Abuja-based environmental expert Joseph Ibrahim and Daniel Mantim, an e-mobility specialist, say the government needs to play an active role if EVs are to win public favor.
We are polluting less, and we are creating green jobs, and we are also making sure that our environment is cleaner while we are developing. And what we need is to continue to advocate and encourage the government to do more. And most importantly, we need support from the private sector, who are the drivers of the economy, to buy into this transition.
Government policies will go a long way to incentivize people who want to go into e-mobility, those who want to assemble these cars, those who want to import them, those who even want to buy.
As a signatory to the Paris Agreement, Nigeria aims to achieve net zero emissions by 2060 with the 2021 Energy Transition Plan, signaling readiness to explore cleaner energy solutions. As Nigeria strides toward electric mobility, innovative solutions and strategic policies are essential for unlocking the full potential of EVs and shaping a sustainable future. For Gibson Amika in Abuja, Nigeria, Amy Reifenrath, VOA News.
From technology, we go to entertainment, where South Sudanese Afro artist Lul Twach Dijok, popularly known as Limited Bulbul, is making a comeback after 4 years of silence with a new hit single, Check Your Body. He joined VOA's Heather Maxwell from Juba for a conversation about the song and his comeback.
Hi, everybody. We are about to meet South Sudan's most popular singer-songwriter, LTD Bulbul. He's in South Sudan. We're joining him virtually. He's been away for 4 years and is back with a brand new single and music video called Check Your Body. Let's check him out.
Check, check your body. Let me check your body.
Check your body. It's one of my new songs from the Man You Love album. I stopped music for 4 years.
Then I decided to release Check Your Body to be the first song in the album, because it's like I've been away, so I need people to dance now.
you stop doing something, you have to come back so serious. And this is the beginning.
So that was released about 3 weeks ago, and I saw that it has already 20,000 views on it. Is that a lot for South Sudan?
Yeah, for South Sudan, it's a big number because, you know, like, in our country here, internet is not everywhere.
We have no record level. It's a little bit difficult. Like, everything that I've been doing, so it was just me with my fans, people who love my music, they support. And then I decide, okay, I have to stop here and then I'll come back again.
The only thing that gave me the motivation to work on the album, because I know I have people who love me so much, and what am I going to do for them?
Wow, that is great. I'm sure everyone is going to really appreciate hearing those songs. I also noticed on YouTube that you had a release party, and there were quite a few people in an auditorium. Was that in South Sudan that you organized yourself, as you say?
We're trying to develop our industry, and this one is a collective responsibility for each and every artist, because our country is a very young country.
What is your biggest dream, LTD?
My biggest dream is for South Sudan music to go international. We really need to work very hard as a South Sudanese people to push this music internationally, because now you can see, like, African music is everywhere now. It's the vibe. African music is the vibe now as we speak. So now we want to be a part of that journey, as we are part of it. Some of us, they already did it. Some of us are coming. Some of us are on the way. So we want to join the world, and we want to give our contribution to the African music.
All right, so that was LTD Bulbul from South Sudan. Make sure to check out that music video. It's called Check Your Body, and more of his music coming up soon off of that new album called The Man That You Love.
It's time for our weekly listener comments, and we bring you a lot of comments this week about rights abuses. Daniel Arek Michael in Yeyi Town writes, "Hello, viewers, South Sudan in focus. Fear is all over the citizens of South Sudan, which silences them not to express their human rights through freedom of speech and movement, which leads to unlawful arrest, torture, and detention of citizens. We have witnessed what Calisto Ladu is going through in the hands of perpetrators, which is against human rights and human freedom of expression. Therefore, I urge the government not to enforce unnecessary arrest on us." James Roy Majok from Mayom County in Unity State writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in focus. South Sudan government should not forget to understand how citizens are experiencing heat wave and other challenges like hunger and intercommunal violence across the country, and issues related to cattle rustling between communities is beyond control. Another big challenge is targeting of humanitarian aid and journalists who are intimidated every day across the country." Samuel Remo in Yeyi writes, "Hello, John Tanz and Nabil Biagio. The current economic crisis in the country has made the general population poor, and politicians may take opportunity during elections to buy people politically, because a poor person has no conscience, but his conscience is food. Politicians want us to line up and clap for them forever and ever." Another listener writes, "Allow me to congratulate the newly appointed Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Honorable Ramadan Mohammed Abdallah Gok, appointed by His Excellency President Salva Kiir. Honorable Gok is tested SPLM comrade who knows South Sudan foreign policy and national interests of the SPLM. Views expressed in this segment does not represent this program or the management of the Voice of America." That's all we prepared for you this Friday, April 26, 2024. We now leave you with Jamnazi and the song Riziki. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Utten, and engineer, Peter Heinley, we wish you a lovely weekend. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mungu alipanga usiku saa ya kulala, mbona wali sasa ni kama usiku jamani.